It's Thursday, February 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, the field of U.S. presidential candidates shrinks after Tuesday's New Hampshire primary.
We are going to make America so great again, maybe greater than ever before.
A U.S. official says Russia's air campaign is helping the Islamic State in Syria. What's the United States doing to fight the Zika virus? And we'll meet a man who was instrumental in helping black Americans get the right to vote. That's all on today's International Edition. After Tuesday's New Hampshire primary, the Republican field has shrunk by two more contestants. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie announced late Wednesday that he is ending his campaign. Christie had been counting on a strong finish in New Hampshire and spent more than 70 days campaigning in the state. However, he failed to generate the kind of numbers needed to keep going. Meanwhile, former Hewlett-Packard CEO Carly Fiorina also announced an end to her candidacy. Fiorina had touted her business experience and her gender as pluses, but failed to get the numbers needed to sustain her campaign. Billionaire businessman Donald Trump and Vermont State Senator Bernie Sanders came out as the big winners on Tuesday. From New Hampshire, Jim Malone has the breakdown.
For Republican Donald Trump, it was a moment to savor.
Oh, wow. Wow. So beautiful.
After a disappointing second-place finish in the Iowa caucuses, the self-styled non-politician known for blunt talk enjoyed a victory lap in New Hampshire.
We are going to start winning again, and we're going to win so much, you are going to be so happy. We are going to make America so great again, maybe greater than ever before. I love you all.
But the surprise in the Republican race was the second-place finish by Ohio Governor John Kasich.
There's magic in the air with this campaign because we don't see it as just another campaign. We see this as an opportunity for all of us, and I mean all of us, to be involved in something that's bigger than our own lives, to change America.
There was a crowded battle to follow Kasich among Iowa caucus winner Ted Cruz, former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, and Florida Senator Marco Rubio. In the Democratic race, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders scored a major victory over frontrunner Hillary Clinton.
The government of our great country belongs to all of the people and not just a handful of wealthy campaign contributors and their super PACs.
Clinton urged her supporters to look ahead to upcoming primaries where she is favored.
You are the reason we are here, and you are the reason we are going to win the nomination and then win this election together. Thank you all.
Your name, please.
Throughout New Hampshire, voters swarmed polling stations, like this one in Merrimack, where Trump supporters were out in force.
He's not the ultimate conservative, but I do believe that in his heart he loves the country, and I think he can put a beating on the media.
As were those backing Bernie Sanders.
The world would enjoy him, and that's an important thing for America, to have a leader who is on your side.
And Hillary Clinton.
Two great candidates. One has a bigger resume than the other. That is her.
We are going now to South Carolina.
The top finishers in New Hampshire now head to the next contests in South Carolina and Nevada. Those Republicans who trailed far behind will have to reassess their presidential ambitions. Jim Malone, VOA News, Manchester, New Hampshire.
While most of the focus was on the people trying to replace him, U.S. President Barack Obama took a trip down memory lane Wednesday, recalling more political collegiality in his home state of Illinois, where he first held public office. He told the Illinois legislature, where he was a state senator before entering national politics, that he recalled Republicans and Democrats voting against each other all the time, but that they also trusted each other. Mr. Obama said that he is disappointed with the increasing rancor in the U.S. election and politics.
It turns folks off.
It discourages them, makes them cynical. And when that happens, more powerful and extreme voices fill the void.
The president called for the elimination of the vast unregulated sums of money being spent on U.S. political campaigns. He also called for the creation of independent agencies to redraw congressional districts after the 2020 national population census and easier rules to register voters. The presidential candidates, like many of us, use Twitter to communicate with the world. But there are some changes in what you might see the next time you open your Twitter account. International Edition's Michael Lippin is here to talk about that and the reaction of the Twitter sphere. Michael?
Thank you, David. Well, Twitter is the focus of today's social media segment because of a major change the company is starting to make to the way that its users see the tweets of all their followers. Now, that change is being made to the Twitter timeline, which up to now has always displayed those tweets of people that you're following in reverse chronological order, as in the most recent tweets appear at the top of your timeline, while the other tweets are getting older as you scroll downward. Now, what Twitter announced on Wednesday is that it has created an algorithm or a computer formula that will try to figure out which tweets it thinks you will be most interested in and show those tweets at the top of your timeline instead of just the most recent tweets. Does that concept sound familiar?
Sounds a little bit like Facebook's newsfeed.
Well, that's right. You know, some people are saying that this kind of algorithm means Twitter will gradually transform itself into another Facebook, because as Facebook users will know, that company has been using algorithms for quite some time to display posts in your newsfeed that it thinks you want to see, as well as Facebook posts that, you know, corporate advertisers want you to see.
Now, what's been the response from Twitter users to this change?
Well, some Twitter fans are appalled that tweets in their timeline could be displayed out of order or out of sequence, so appalled that they've been using the hashtag RIPTwitter in recent days. Now, the letters RIP, for those who don't know, stands for Rest in Peace, and that's a saying that one makes in honor of someone who dies. They, of course, think that this algorithm means Twitter as we know it is going to die as well. One Twitter user, Robert Trzynski, wrote this: "The whole idea of social media was to let us have control of our own information flow, selecting and policing it ourselves." Well, you know, in Twitter's defense, the company says that this change to the timeline format is optional and that you will have a chance to opt in or out of the algorithm as Twitter gradually makes it available to all of its users.
Now, what's Twitter's CEO saying?
Well, that's Jack Dorsey, and his handle is @Jack. This is the way that he describes the new and optional timeline format: tweets you missed from people you follow, recapped in reverse chronological order. And by that, he means that even when the algorithm is on, it will still show you what Twitter thinks are important tweets, with the most recent of those tweets at the top of your timeline. David?
All right. Thanks a lot, Michael. And you can send us a tweet. We're @VOA_IE. Coming up, a top U.S. official says Russian airstrikes are helping Islamic State. And how does the United States plan to fight the Zika virus? This is VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The United States, Russia, and more than a dozen other countries meet in Munich, Germany today to try to hammer out an end to five years of Syrian civil war that has left more than 250,000 people dead. The U.S. State Department's top envoy for Syria, Brett McGurk, told the House Foreign Affairs Committee Wednesday that the current assault on Aleppo, Syria, is creating an unacceptable flood of refugees and a humanitarian crisis.
There are besieged communities across Syria, millions of people. Some of them are besieged by ISIL. Some of them are besieged by, most of them are besieged by the regime. Some of them are besieged by elements, more extreme elements of the opposition. All of them should have humanitarian access.
McGurk told the committee that Russian airstrikes against Syrian opposition forces in and around Aleppo are actually hindering the U.S.-led coalition's efforts to fight the Islamic State group in Syria.
And what is happening with opposition forces we were working with to fight ISIL, and if you look on this map, just north of Aleppo, you can see the extent of ISIL's western advance. We were working with local opposition forces to move east to fight ISIL. And that was a very sophisticated endeavor, but as the Russian airstrike campaign has begun, particularly north of Aleppo, those fighters are now peeled off that line to go fight the regime advance.
Meanwhile, at the UN, Russian envoy Vitaly Churkin said Wednesday that his government is not about to be apologetic for its airstrikes in Syria. Churkin said Russian forces are present there legally at the invitation of the Syrian government. The West has criticized the airstrikes for targeting largely Syrian opposition groups rather than the Islamic State or other terrorist fighters. The Obama administration has been trying for months to forge a political solution to the Syrian civil war. The Russian airstrikes against the city of Aleppo caused the Syrian opposition to walk out of recent peace talks in Geneva. It has also aggravated the humanitarian crisis along the Syrian-Turkish border, with tens of thousands of displaced persons flooding the border area. Nigeria says it will boost security at camps for refugees driven from their homes by violence after two female suicide bombers killed at least 58 people at a camp in Dikwa. Officials say that three female suicide bombers disguised themselves as refugees and entered the camp. Two of them blew themselves up. The third changed her mind and surrendered to police when she discovered her parents and siblings were living there. The attack was carried out late Tuesday, but not reported until Wednesday because of bad communications. Nigeria's vice president said Wednesday it is regrettable that the heartless terrorists chose to unleash what he called their wickedness on people who were taking refuge from previous acts of destruction in their homes. He promised the government will place formidable security around camps for what is known as internally displaced people. No one has claimed responsibility, but suspicion fell immediately on Boko Haram, the Islamic extremists behind much of the violence that forced people to flee their homes. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention chief said Wednesday that the United States needs to prepare for a significant number of infections with the Zika virus. Dr. Thomas Frieden told the House Foreign Affairs Committee that his organization and others are working around the clock to understand the virus and come up with ways to fight it.
We're working around the clock to find out as much as we can, as quickly as we can, to inform the public and to do everything that we can do to reduce the risk to pregnant women.
Zika virus has been spreading rapidly in the Americas and the Caribbean. Although not yet confirmed, scientists believe there is a link between Zika and a birth defect called microcephaly, where infants' brains do not develop properly and they are born with unusually small heads. Dr. Frieden said Wednesday that the CDC continues to ask pregnant women to stay out of areas of high Zika infection.
If you're pregnant, we recommend you not go to a place where Zika is spreading. And if you're pregnant and you live in an area where Zika is spreading, do everything you can to protect yourself against mosquito bites.
Frieden says the main culprit in spreading the disease, the Aedes aegypti mosquito, is tough to control because it breeds in large numbers and needs only a small amount of standing water to reproduce.
It's an indoor biter. It bites all through the day, including at dawn and dusk. It hides in closets and under tables and places that are hard to get to. Its larvae or eggs, its eggs can be drought resistant and can persist for some time.
Frieden said that the United States can look forward to more infections with Zika, particularly in places where another virus carried by the same mosquito, dengue fever, has shown up. He said there are several measures that can be taken to prevent the spread of the disease, mostly by controlling the mosquitoes that carry it. As scientists around the world race to combat the spread of the Zika virus, dozens of global health bodies, including researchers, academic journals, and funding organizations, have committed to sharing data on the virus. A statement signed by more than 30 organizations is meant to ensure that any information relevant to combating Zika is made freely and openly available to the international community as soon as is feasibly possible. Signatories include the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Doctors Without Borders, the Public Library of Science, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, along with its Chinese equivalent, the Journal of the American Medical Association Network, and the U.S. National Institutes of Health. Researchers who signed the agreement were assured that their work would still be eligible for publication in science journals. Coming up, what's ahead for the U.S. economy? And we'll meet a man who helped blacks get the vote in the United States, and a California comedy troupe pokes fun at the presidential candidates. This is VOA.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The head of the U.S. Central Bank warned Wednesday that falling financial markets and global economic weakness could slow the pace of interest rate increases by the United States. Appearing on Capitol Hill, Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen spoke about the central bank's interest rate policy for the first time since December, when the Fed raised its rates for the first time in nearly a decade. She said the central bank remains confident the U.S. economy is on track for stronger growth and a slight increase in inflation, which experts say has been too low in recent quarters.
Ongoing employment gains and faster wage growth should support the growth of real incomes and therefore consumer spending. And global economic growth should pick up over time, supported by highly accommodative monetary policies abroad. Against this backdrop, the committee expects that with gradual adjustments in the stance of monetary policy, economic activity will expand at a moderate pace in coming years, and that labor market indicators will continue to strengthen.
Though risks have intensified, Yellen added that it is not likely the Fed would find it necessary to reverse its rate rise in December and cut rates once again. At the same time, she acknowledged the weaker economic figures that have emerged this year have made the central bank's experts nervous. Yellen said uncertainty about China's currency policies and its economic prospects have contributed to increased volatility in global markets.
Although recent economic indicators do not suggest a sharp slowdown in Chinese growth, declines in the foreign exchange value of the renminbi have intensified uncertainty about China's exchange rate policy and the prospects for its economy. This uncertainty led to increased volatility in global financial markets, and against the backdrop of persistent weakness abroad, exacerbated concerns about the outlook for global growth.
Key stock market indices in Europe and the United States were mostly higher as investors assessed Yellen's comments. Slowing foreign economies and the very strong U.S. dollar also hurt the demand for U.S. exports and crimp economic growth. The Fed chief said the U.S. economy has been less supportive of growth recently, but added that these factors are likely to ease in the medium term. February is Black History Month in the United States, and the annual month-long national observance pays tribute to important people and events that shaped the history of African Americans. VOA's Chris Simpkins tells us how one man fought against discrimination to help millions of blacks obtain the right to vote.
Martin meant everything to me, really. He was freedom.
C.T. Vivian remembers working with Martin Luther King Jr. in a campaign to guarantee voting rights for blacks.
Here we are, a democracy, and we're refusing the vote for at least 10 to 20 million people. We fought in every war that this country has had, and we have died in every one that it's had, and yet we didn't get the right to vote until 1965.
Civil rights leader Vivian and others were on a mission to get blacks registered to vote in Selma, Alabama. The city, like many in the South, was racially divided 51 years ago. Selma's white leaders were determined to prevent African Americans from voting by enforcing discriminatory regulations.
We were murdered for the right to vote. We were beaten at night by policemen. We were shot by them in the daytime, right? Because they wanted to keep us under constraint.
Vivian took on Sheriff Jim Clark, an admitted racist who enforced local laws that denied blacks voting rights.
I told him, I said, you can turn your back on
me, but you cannot turn your back upon the idea of justice.
So he decided to do what he always does and beat people.
Despite the dangers, Vivian led dozens of blacks to the courthouse in Selma in a campaign known as Nonviolent Direct Action to expose racism.
We knew that we were going to get the right to vote. We wouldn't be citizens of this country until we had the right to vote.
The vote is the most powerful instrument ever devised by man for breaking down injustice.
When President Lyndon Johnson signed the 1965 Voting Rights Act, Vivian knew they had won the voting rights struggle.
From that time on, there was no doubt in our mind that we were going to have the right to vote. I'm most proud about it because it gave dignity to us that we did not have.
Being a part of history is humbling.
Very few white people really know, and you'd be surprised how few black people really know too, right? If you know that somebody died for your freedom in the very beginning, you gotta give that a second thought, and it gives you a better understanding of the struggle itself.
We're willing to be beaten for democracy.
But C.T. Vivian says he wants to be remembered for doing everything he could to achieve freedom and equality for all African Americans. Chris Simpkins, VOA News, Atlanta.
And you can see more of Chris's reporting by logging on to our website. That's voanews.com. As we mentioned at the top of our show, the U.S. political campaign season is in full swing. And as the presidential contenders take center stage, actors and comedians are drawing inspiration from the candidates for their own smaller stages. Elizabeth Lee takes us to a comedy show in Los Angeles called Candidate Confessions that's drawing crowds.
Get crazy! Get stupid crazy!
At the Second City Comedy Club in Hollywood, the U.S. presidential candidates and even President Obama are showing off their musical talent.
This has been the most exciting, interesting primary season I've ever seen.
Many of the writers say the candidates provide such rich material that the show was easy to write, except for Hillary Clinton's part, says director Rainey O'Brien.
That was the most difficult. I mean, just because she's so well known.
Because in the end, it was all for one goal.
Erin Coleman plays Hillary Clinton in Candidate Confessions.
She rolls her eyes dismissively, which I think is hilarious when she thinks that, when she just has no tolerance for fools. And so her she has a little eye roll that she does. She has a laugh that will come out at inappropriate times that we do in the number.
I do it all the time.
a couple times. She can get kind of crazy eyes when she's trying to emit human warmth.
This is comedy and we're lampooning these people, but all of these jokes come from a true place about the candidates. I think that in some ways we find truth about candidates through comedy in a way that we don't get by watching them perform in speeches and debates.
Josh Willis is one of the writers for Donald Trump's song.
Mexicans, illegals, drugs are a thing. Said that.
Some of the stuff he said I thought was just too offensive to put in the song, but most of that made it in anyhow.
Many of the people in the audience are in their 20s and 30s and grew up with this type of political satire on TV and on social media. For some, it's their only source of news.
It's playing this really important role that, you know, some of the traditional media are failing to reach the audience that satirical comedy can engage so effectively.
Hey, black voters, I'm on your side.
I think it's an important part of the political process. In a way, we also poke fun at ourselves, and I think that's a really healthy aspect of this kind of comedy, too.
What would Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton think of this show if they saw it?
She'd just think it was silly and kind of true and kind of not true, and she just think it was ridiculous.
Honestly, I think Trump would probably agree with our song. I mean, he said almost everything that's in the song.
The writers say as the political season continues, they will make adjustments to the show to keep it current. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
Thanks for joining us for VOA's International Edition. You can find more by logging on to our website, voanews.com. Tracy Carter directed our program. Dave Magnus was our engineer. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
There is a rising tide of religious persecution emerging worldwide, and it disproportionately threatens religious minority groups. This threat touches Christians in the Middle East, Yazidis in Iraq, Baha'is in Iran, Hindus in Pakistan and Bangladesh, Muslims in India, or Sunni Muslims in Shia areas, or vice versa. The threat, said Special Advisor for Religious Minorities in the Near East and South and Central Asia, Knox Thames, is clear and present. Terrorists and non-state actors such as ISIL, the Nusra Front, and Al-Qaeda are some of the worst persecutors of religious minorities. But individual attackers have also perpetrated acts of violence against religious minorities. And unfortunately, in far too many places, governments continue to limit the exercise of religious freedoms. Protecting and promoting the universal right to freedom of religion is central to American foreign policy. Not only is it the right thing to do, said Special Advisor Knox, it is a smart thing to do as it plays a major role in contributing to more stable, progressive, and dynamic societies. Wherever people face religious persecution, the United States is at work finding ways to help. For example, the U.S. pressures governments to enact reforms so that religious minorities are able to freely practice their faith. Militarily, through airstrikes, the U.S. is providing protection for minority religions to remain in their ancestral homeland. The U.S. continues to provide humanitarian assistance to Syrians and Iraqis, including refugees and displaced populations, and supports resettlement for those who cannot safely return home. The U.S. is encouraging countries in the Middle East to support, through education, respect for human rights and religious freedom. Governments in the region are also being urged to take steps to protect religious minorities during holy days and religious gatherings. The United States, said President Barack Obama, will continue to work with a broad coalition against those who have subjected religious minorities to unspeakable violence and persecution. All people deserve the fundamental dignity of practicing their faith free from fear, intimidation, and violence.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.